listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane on 88.1 and 92.3 FM. And this is KYRS Local News. I'm Courtney Broderick.
And this is Tom Topping. Welcome to KYRS Local News Weekly Recap Show. Christian Adams is off this week. Today we have several reports we think you'll enjoy. Courtney is going to report about the support local artists are getting from a new program from the Spokane City Library. Her second report covers an analysis of forces driving up evictions.
Oh yeah, and then Tom has the latest regarding a local organization which is working to provide basic needs for our houseless neighbors in sub-freezing temperatures. In the second half of our show, he interviews with Rick Lloyd, who is the chair of the 4th LD Democratic Club, representing Democrats in an area which includes Spokane Valley. But before that, here's a report from Christian Adams about the city of Spokane's participation in lawsuits against the manufacturers of opioids, like OxyContin.
Spokane is participating in a lawsuit against multiple opioid manufacturers. A contract to join a Seattle-based firm in the suit was approved by the city council. The suit is against companies like Purdue Pharma, who make OxyContin. Purdue Pharma filed bankruptcy to settle over 2,600 lawsuits put on by state and local governments. Half of those suits have been settled for around $10 billion. Quote, council has been agitating to get on this for a long time because of the damages that these companies have caused our community, unquote, said Councilmember Breanne Beggs. Quote, what I would say over the summer, there were several court decisions which went in favor of this type of litigation on behalf of cities and counties. And so when our legal department looked at it again, they said, quote, you know what? The benefits probably outweigh the risks, unquote. In May, the city council passed a resolution asking the city to look at the possibility of taking legal action against these manufacturers.
We are still collecting ideas from listeners for our Spokane Gems project. If you know of a cool place, a forgotten but intriguing story about Spokane or the region, or a quirky bit of history, send it to us at news@kyrs.org for a chance to share it with listeners.
So, Courtney, tell us about your piece that you're going to play now about the local library with the art.
Oh yeah, so basically I just learned about it and I'm very excited about it. I'm really into writing myself. So basically the Spokane libraries have organized this website where there's a roster of local artists from the Washington area, such as singers, writers, performers that you could get inspired from, get in contact with.
How did you hear about it?
I actually heard about it I was just looking up local culture news, just online, just to see what was going on, and that was just one of the first things that popped up, and I just briefly go over the website, and...
Yeah, I think we should play it.
Yeah,
it sounds really good.
With an abundance of local artists, Spokane has been the host for a variety of festivals this year, with Terrain recently kicking off the fall season last week with reports of over 290 artists in collaboration, making for one of the largest community art events this year. So, how can our rising artists keep momentum going after such grand endeavors? The Spokane County Library District has assembled an online repository of local artists, all to celebrate the creative talent within our community. Known as Spokane Creators, the site offers many resources such as creative workshops and information on upcoming events in the area. There's also a list of artists, musicians, writers, and performers from the Eastern Washington area to discover and inspire. Aspiring artists are encouraged to sign up and share talents. and can contribute their work to a catalog on the site as well. Some upcoming workshops include photography 3D artwork, a demonstration by professional photographer Dean Davis on how to use cameras and equipment and focus on three-dimensional pieces. The workshop will take place at the studio in Spokane Valley, Thursday, October 10th at 3 p.m. Also, an event, How to Apply for an Artist Grant, will be instructed by Lydia Boss, who will provide a rundown of applying for grants and funding opportunities, as well as how grants are made. The seminar will take place at the North Spokane Library Meeting Room, Thursday, October 17th at 6 p.m. For more information on webinars, workshops, or further opportunities, you can visit their website, www.spokanecreators.org.
Thank you, Courtney. Mm-hmm. I was so impressed with the Jules Helping Hands folks when we interviewed them a few months ago, and I've been following them on Facebook, and they really are doing some amazing things. People that are in need are able to post what they are in need of, and there's a huge network of people that has been following them, and usually somebody steps up to help. So I just happened to go to the birthday party for Julie, which Jules Helping Hands is named after Julie Garcia, and this is my report.
Last week, Jules Helping Hands, a local organization which provides for the basic needs of homeless, or houseless, the term they prefer, held a party to celebrate the birthday of founder Julie Garcia. It was a potluck that was not the typical birthday potluck. Instead of gifts and food for Julie, her birthday was leveraged to help the houseless. They, her volunteers, and their allies lined up down the block together to share a warm potluck meal. The gifts were tables of warm clothing and blankets and were distributed to all those in need who showed up. The wind came up and a cold rain began to fall. Not to be deterred, the food and clothing and the music and dancing continued well into the evening. Julie said, "It's okay, we've been rained on before." This week, with below freezing temperatures and snow from an early season snowfall just days before, the party is over. But the work of Jules Helping Hands continued across from the bus station in downtown Spokane. Stephanie Ula sent out this invitation on Facebook Live.
Hey, we're across from the bus plaza. We're here. We have food. We have coats. We have gloves. We have hats. So if you know anybody that needs any warm stuff tonight, come on down.
The day before, City of Spokane placed a few more loads of volcanic rock under another of the freeway underpasses, denying many houseless a sheltered spot to sleep out of the snow and rain. It was another action from Spokane Mayor David Condon, who hasn't yet made any progress on a new homeless shelter for the winter. Today, he endorsed Nadine Woodward for Spokane Mayor.
This is Tom Topping for KYRS Local News.
Yeah, they're a really amazing group. They're just doing great work. My last piece here is just a Washington News Service update about the crisis that has been undergoing the housing market and some of the eviction issues that have been going on in the local areas. Most renters facing eviction lack access to legal counsel, and because of that are set up to fail, says a new analysis according to a press release by the Washington News Service. The Center for American Progress brief found nationwide about 90% of landlords have legal representation in eviction cases, while only 10% of tenants do. According to University of Washington research, more than 130,000 adults in the state were evicted between 2013 and 2017. Seattle attorney Andrew Ackley says even with favorable state laws on their side, renters will struggle to afford representation in Washington. Quote, facing the prospect of not just having to get caught up on rent, but also legal fees, people are pinched almost from the start, to the point that some of them don't even bother, and they take a weaker position, settle for really less than they're entitled to, and essentially are at the whim of the landlord, unquote. The University of Washington research notes, evictions along with the housing affordability crisis are contributing to the state's rising homelessness rate, now at its highest level since the Great Recession. Evictions also disproportionately affect people of color. Heidi Schulteis, co-author of the Center for American Progress Brief, says an attorney can help a renter in a number of ways, such as negotiating additional time for them to move. Critically, she notes, evictions stay on a person's credit report for 7 years, and legal counsel can ensure a filing doesn't go onto their records. Quote, landlords can and do discriminate against tenants with eviction filings on their records, even when the filing didn't actually result in an eviction. Even if the tenant goes on to win their case, that will go on your credit report, unquote. Unlike criminal matters, defendants in civil cases aren't continually guaranteed legal representation, but some cities have passed rights to counsel for evictions, and Schulteis says these cities are saving money. In New York City, renters with incomes at or below 200% of the poverty line are insured legal representation. She says the city did a cost-benefit analysis of this policy. Quote, based almost entirely on the savings that would accrue to the homeless services system after the cost of providing legal counsel for tenants in eviction cases, the city would save $320 million every year, unquote.
KYRS exists because of the support of the public. We thank you for giving a little back with sustaining monthly support to continue independent music, local interest, and progressive news programming that is refreshing, engaging, and helps expand perspectives. Just text Give KYRS to 44321 and rest assured that you helped keep KYRS alive and on the air. Well, we have an interview, and I recorded it. For a few decades, the very conservative Spokane Valley has been dominated by political views varying from independent to conservative to far right. However, with the rise of far-right political leaders like President Trump, Vice President Pence, and Washington's 4th District Representative Matt Shea, the door has been opened in the area for a new generation of moderate Democrats and progressives. As chair of the 4th LD Democratic Club since 2008, Rick Lloyd has been fighting the good fight for years and sees the changes coming. And here's the interview. All right, Rick Lloyd, welcome to KYRS.
Pleasure to be here, Tom.
Great. Well, listen, I understand you've been participating in the civic life of Spokane and Spokane Valley for quite a while. What's your role now and what has it been?
Well, in the beginning of December of 2008, I was elected chair, and I've been elected every 2 years since then. And I've been serving the chair of the capacity of the 4th District. And before that, I was the vice chair from December of 2004 until December of 2008 when I became chair.
And what does the chair do?
Well, in the 4th District, it's a lot of things. In the early days, a lot of things were basically fell on my shoulders. I did the recruitment. I went out and put signs up for candidates. I went knocked on doors. And we didn't have as robust a group as we did in 2006, 2008 as we do today. It's a night and day difference. And it's a long list of things that I did.
Yeah, we'll get to that. But I just wanted to get a little bit of the context of where we started at here, and considering the area was once Spokane County, well, Eastern Washington was once represented by Thomas Foley, and I believe he was a very strong Democrat. It's changed quite a bit in the last 50 years. So you've been here through a lot of that period. So what have you, political changes have you seen, and what do you think the future holds?
Well, there's been a lot of shifts. I mean, I think the big seismic one happened in 1994 when Newt Gingrich and his, what I call a contract on America, was adapted. And that I think is when the Gulf of Divide started to crack out. I mean, there used to be a time when after 5 o'clock, you know, once political business was over, everyone had a cocktail or coffee or whatever they can eat. Now, today, it's a very deep and divisive. There's people who do not want to associate each other or cooperate with each other in any way or shape or form. And this has gotten worse. And I have to admit, for the chair of the fourth, we are blessed. We have a very fortunate to have a cohesive group that works well. We're doing a lot of things. And I have to thank that since 2006, we've practically doubled our PCO spilled. We have a number of viable volunteers providing all kinds of enthusiasm and efforts for candidates in the Valley for city council races and guys putting up signs for Lisa Brown last year. And I want to thank three people, particularly for this great upswell in Democratic enthusiasm. I want to thank Donald Trump, Matt Shea, and Mike Pence, because they have turned out to be the three best recruiters I've ever had.
Indeed. Well, that sort of got to one of my questions here. I was going to ask you what was the driving force of all the new participation. And what does all this new participation look like?
It looks like everybody else. It looks like 20 people that you would see randomly walking through the mall. I mean, we have people of my age, you know, almost ready to retire at 65. We've had, in fact, 2 years ago we had an 18-year-old vice chair. We have people of every type of diversity you could think about here in the 4th District. And we've come up with a great mix of people and ideas and enthusiasm that has been galvanized together through the works of some people like Rebecca Mason and Petra Hoy and a number of others that has not been seen in probably at least 10 years.
Yeah, I had a sense that there was a lot of changes brewing. In the recent past, though, Democratic candidates have tried unsuccessfully to be elected in this area. Why do you think that is, and what do you see about which way it's trending now?
Well, I see us, you know, progressively moving better. I have to admit, very often when we, as Democrats, or any party for that matter, gets people elected, it's also not often always how good the campaign was or how great the candidate was. Sometimes it's just nothing more than favorable political tides coupled with a good candidate and a well-run campaign. It's that favorable tide that pushes you in. Now, we're seeing things happen here in the Valley that is proving that the population is becoming more progressive, more urban, and more concerned. I mean, the homeless issue. People are paying attention to this, whereas before, I don't think anyone 10 years ago would have given it a second thought. People are concerned about how this city is going to grow, how it's going to deal with social issues, how will we manage our police and fire protection, and how the roads can be paid for. People are starting to pay attention to this, and they realize that if you really care about your community, you have to elect people who really care about your community.
What are the differences in policies between the far-right Republicans in this area and what I would say are the moderate Democrats? You think my analysis is pretty fair?
I would say, actually, in the 4th District or Spokane Valley, and that encompasses Liberty Lake and Millwood and unincorporates Spokane County as well, there is definitely a strong right-wing conservative faction. Matt Shea, just to name one of them, is part of that group. There's another more mainstream group which does not care to deal with the Republican Party, that does not care to deal with Matt Shea. And their voices are now being heard louder because they are tired of the constant drumbeat from the far right and the type of divisiveness and the type of just outright fear-mongering and hatred that they are. I mean, here we have a sitting state representative's legislative aide talking about dividing the state in half and saying if it doesn't happen, there will be bloodshed. I mean, I expect that in some third-world country. I do not expect that. I don't think very many people support that type of thinking in the 4th District because we're not a third world country.
My thought about that is that some people are liking the idea, and it's just serving to divide people more.
Well, I have a feeling, you know, there's some people out there who think that somehow partitioning the state would just magically solve a multitude of ills. Yet, economically, by every source I have read and heard and talked with, it does not pencil out. They would go from being a robust, vibrant economy where you have the roads and are repaired, they're plowed in the wintertime with a school system that's ranked, I think, somewhere around 22nd, to a school system that could easily somehow slide underneath Mississippi or Louisiana or Alabama. And I don't think the cost of what they're trying to do is square this as a freedom argument, yet it's going to end up being very costly because ignorance is costly, and that's what will happen. They'll end up with an unsustainable state that just, it will not be anywhere near close to what they think it is. And I have a feeling some of the things they're talking about, I don't think they can get away with constitutionally, frankly.
We're talking with Rick Lloyd, chair of the 4th LD Democratic Club.
And plus, I can't recall the last time a state was divided like this and was been successfully accomplished. It had to be, I think, with West Virginia and Virginia sometime back in the 1800s, if I recall right. I just don't see this, A, for the people having the political will to make it happen, nor if it ever did happen or it would ever be financially viable for a moment.
My interpretation of the Democrats I've seen running for office in the Valley is they're not all that liberal. They're pretty moderate, really. Do you think that's pretty fair?
Yes, I think that's very true. Now, I mean, everybody has different types of stripes when it comes to politics and things like this, and they do go through an endorsement process. We feel comfortable endorsing them that they share, you know, all of, not perhaps all of our values, but a majority of them, and they believe in the democratic causes and principles. I'm always, when people ask me, well, gee, they don't embrace everything that you embrace, I'm always reminded of what the former mayor of New York, Ed Cook, said. And he said, if you like half of my ideas, vote for me. If you like 70% of my ideas, vote for me. If you like 100% of my ideas, get your head examined. And I think, you know, that's true of everybody. You know, you're never going to find someone that you totally agree with, but find someone that puts forth the virtues and values and is going to give you the type of government to create the type of community and state and country that you desire.
You talked a little bit about some of the new hardworking volunteers that have been pretty effective. Can you talk a little bit about their talents and their strengths?
I think one thing is just the sheer numbers. I'm willing to say that we have multiplied by 5 times. We're putting, I don't want to discuss specifics, but I would say that we are putting 5 times the amount of volunteers we put out in 2008. The doorbell count of the campaigns, very early on the campaign was, you know, well over 8,000-9,000 doors they were hitting, and this is before Labor Day, and that's quite remarkable considering that I think in the city of Spokane Valley, you have approximately, I think, 25,000 voters. And if you hit 8,000 of them, you probably hit probably close to 50% of those doors. You made a contact with somebody that may have never seen anybody ever run for office at their door or have a chance to talk with someone and ask them, why is the city doing this or that? So it's a great opportunity for another candidate, but for the, you know, average person who lives in Spokane Valley, see what is possible from the candidate who is at their door.
Oh, in other words, give them a fair listen first.
Yes,
before
absolutely.
You make up your mind. And I suppose that would go both ways, too, really.
Mm-hmm.
So when can we expect to see more liberal or moderate candidates elected out in the Spokane Valley in the 4th and the 5th Congressional?
Well, at the 5th Congressional, that's a very, very tall order. I would say you're going to have the fundraising capacity to generate somewhere between $5 and $8 million. And that means you may have to have a little bit of your own personal fortune, should have some name recognition, and, you know, been in the community, and perhaps a prominent position. You may be
okay, so then bringing it back down to the 4th then?
Yeah. Now there, you say, when will we see more progressive candidates? Well, when they decide to run. I mean, we are out always talking to people all the time, but when you think about asking anybody to run for any office, it is a daunting thing to ask somebody, because what you're asking them is, A, you need to clear this through any significant other you have, any children you have, and if they're a school age, that's another concern as well. Your family.
And with a man like you, Rick, in charge, I'm sure that you're going to be able to convince a few people to take on that challenge. And thank you so much for the interview and for joining us on KYRS today.
Yeah, that was great work, Tom. Thank you. You've been listening to KYRS Local News. Make sure to catch our daily morning broadcast at 8 a.m. and tune in next week for a recap of the week. Friday afternoons at 4:30. You can also listen online at kyrs.org or at kyrslocalnews.podbean.com.
KYRS Local News received support from Atticus Coffee and Gifts, 222 North Howard Street in downtown Spokane, near the carousel and just down the block from their other store, Bo Radley's.
Thank you for listening.
Join us again next Friday for KYRS Local News, live at 4:30, and Tuesday through Friday for the KYRS Morning Local News at 7:58 a.m. Have a good weekend, and don't forget, enjoy this nice weather we got today.